accession number 27226, Reel 13.
Line of Hook, Reel 13.
Okay. Well, I don't know very much about Greenwich because, as you know, I got tonsillitis and it was quite an interesting experience, but not actually at Greenwich. We go to Greenwich purely and simply to the Great Painted Hall or whatever it is for a knife and fork course, which is telling you all about naval history and make you into a naval fleet of armed sailor or whatever it is they make you into. And there are two aspects of that that are rather frightening because you're just newly commissioned. And one of the first things you've got to do, of course, is eat. And the very first day you're there, you're going to breakfast. And if you know the Painted Hall at Greenwich, which you probably do, it's a long hall, very nice for big parties. But it's not so funny when you're a junior sub-lieutenant going there for the first time at breakfast, a little late, and all the heads of the department are sitting at the top table, and you have to walk down that empty corridor all the way to the table to get your breakfast. That is the first shaker. The second was that really Greenwich was quite interesting, but I was getting ill then. I was quite fragile, and the only thing I remember, I had a skittle area under the underground. The breakfast was one thing, and it can't have been very long that I was there. It was only a 14-day course anyway, and I was whipped off to hospital with a temperature of 104 near and by, near going 5, and 9 months under death.
Were you given any advice as a would-be officer in the Fleet Air Arm? Were you given any advice there as a would-be officer?
Not really. Not that I can remember. I just have very little recall of Greenwich, per se. I must have been quite ill at that time because I wasn't there very long. And I went off into hospital with the boys from the Schoenhaus and Nidau business group.
You described this earlier on in some detail. So what actually happened when you left hospital?
Oh, I got into an ambulance and I was not really with it and whipped off to Chatham Hospital.
No, I was thinking after you actually was discharged from hospital, where did you go then?
Well, after there, I went to kill that one completely. I left the hospital, went home on leave, obviously, for a wee while, and my next appointment was to Arbroath in Scotland, flying Swordfish, stooging, as they say, all observers. Right. This is an interim situation that arises when you come, when you're in the Navy, when there aren't any ships or there's nothing there, you end up doing secondary work, and this was a question of training observers in Scotland, which in itself was rather hairy, because you come back to England after flying Harvards, which is a very nice lowing airplane, to flying a big airplane, and the Swordfish is a big airplane, very safe, very pleasant, bloody cold because of an open cockpit in the middle of winter.
Now I got up.
Right, so we, after the spell with tonsillitis, which was just getting better, really, for what it's worth, I go to HMS Condor in Arbroath, which is on the northeast coast of Scotland, north of Dundee. Very wild, very cold. My first trip is the 10th of March in that year.
What was the Swordfish like to fly?
Very, very reliable aeroplane. It just went on and on and on. Very cold. Very uncomfortable. We were wrapped up in everything. In our outer suits and warm boots, and as warm as you could be. Open cockpit, and it's the middle of winter in Scotland. Not funny at all. Well, first of all, I did one trip in a Blenheim, sending the twin, just for general flying over Scotland to see what it was like. And then I got air experience in a Swordfish with myself. I'd never flown a Swordfish before in my life. I got into it and I flew it for 3/4 of an hour flying around.
Was it a slow aircraft? Was it a slow aircraft?
Yes and no. It was 85 knots. It crewed about 85, 90 knots, 120, something that in that range. That's relatively slow, but it's in the time nature of the aircraft at that time. Perfect for the job. No question at all, except for convoy work in the North Atlantic going to Russia and everything. It must have been very cruel because you had no top cover at all. It was open and you were flying there. There's no protection at all, none whatsoever. And it did get cold.
Do they have any vices at all? Do they have any vices as an aircraft?
No, it was a simple basic aircraft. Not as complicated as a Harvard at all. Very easy to fly, but big. You don't realise how big it is until afterwards you've flown it and go back and see it in the museums, how big they really were, all these aircraft.
It's quite interesting that you were given no real handover with it. You just said, there's the Sawfish and fly it.
That's right.
Obviously at that stage then you become quite confident in your abilities as a pilot. Because it's 3 or 4 months, isn't it, since you'd last flown?
That's right. I flew in a Sawfish straight away myself. And I never flew with an instructor, but there's no duel at all. It was just myself in Scotland in the middle of winter. And Scotland is a lot of bumps sticking up out of the ground and not a comfortable place to learn to fly with observers by any means. We're doing sea navigation and land navigation. And one of the first jobs I got, and bear in mind I'd never really flown over Scotland, was to take, the local navigation. I was taking up 10 days later, on the March of 10th, I was general flying. 21st, I did my first solo on a Sawfish. Did local flying just to get some familiarisation with the place, and then I did sea navigation with observers, whom I've never had before, in the back, who were telling me to fly. They were taking me all over the place, and I did two lots of sea navigation exercises, and then a navigation exercise with a Sawfish with gunnery at the back, and then sea navigation, land nav, and sea nav. In other words, this was for, I was just driving an aircraft with observers in it. The object of the exercise is to take them around, listen to their instruction, but always get them back, which I managed to do. Well, this started off the 21st of March. We did a week of that with, I had 7 trips, training trips for the observers. And that's when I'd never slowed for Sawfish before. You don't think about it at the time, it worked and that was it. It was an aeroplane, you flew it. And that was Navy's attitude, of course. We got aeroplanes later on in the service when I was in abroad, twin engines. We taught ourselves to fly twins. They're just the aeroplanes were there, we flew them, period. Everyone, Seafires, Hurricanes, you name the aircraft, we flew them.
Would you have anything like pilots, no?
Oh, yes. There's always pilots, though. But you know, the fundamentals of all these things was how to start, how to stop, any peculiarities they had, the difference between a heavy aircraft like a Sawfish, where the spin characteristics you can forget because they just come out there biplane, to a thing like a Master, which had quite a vicious stall situation, heavy loading on the wings and that sort of different. But you understood the fundamental principles of flying. The first time you found your relationship between the aircraft and the ground and you come to land. And then, I suppose, you're flying a piece of kit. So, I'm now in Scotland, and this is, it's interesting, because after right. At the April the 1st, which is exactly 20 days from going up to Arbroath, they sent me off to this other end of Scotland in the middle of winter to Lamrock for a gunnery shoot with 2 observers. We flew over in snow, which was not at all pleasant. The ground changed when it's covered in snow as well, but we did have a bit of it in Canada, so that didn't really matter. But on the way across, I was taken short. And the air, the time for the trip was 2 hours 40 minutes, and we're flying by Arran, Isle of Arran, and I wanted to pee badly, very badly indeed, and we didn't know where we were, but we knew we were near Arran. Bear in mind, we'd never been there where before. We would, it's navigation by the seat of your pants and a map. And I thought, well, I've done precautionary landings and all that sort of thing. I'd make a landing in a field and have a pee. And we flew around to Macrihanish, not to Macrihanish, sorry, to the Isle of Arran. And when we tried to find a field, they were all staked out against paratroopers. So we couldn't land on one of those. And so I landed the Swordfish, believe it or not, sideways on into a field which had just widened the aircraft, coming in sideways. Landed in this field, which was a potato field, alongside the water, along the cliff on one left-hand side, and the sea on the other. I mean, I was crazy, but we didn't think about these things. And we dropped it there onto the this field for a pee, and it was only tiny and very narrow, not very long, and I went through the hedge going in, took the tail strut off. Didn't make me very popular, but we got in, got out of the place. A native came over from out in the bush on the Bundok somewhere with a bottle of Vat 69, which we took a dose of quite quickly, had a good slash, and then we had to decide what we're going to do next. We've got to get out of it. And it's a potato field, you know, it's muddy. We got out of this thing, pushed the aircraft with the aid of this wild Scotsman all the way back to the far end of the field and got everybody on board and set off. Well, first of all, you put your foot on the brakes, open the throttle wide, and hope that you get plenty of power before you can get going. And the kite just moved across the ground in mud. It was just sliding forward in mud. So we let the brakes off, and it started to go forward. We kept it going forward and kept the nose down. It was staggering along the field, and we came to the edge of the field, another hedge. So the only way to get over that was pull the stick back. We'd only just got flying speed. Pull the stick back, took the other tail strut off. Well, by that time, we were on the wrong side of Arran, the west side of Arran, going down to Macrihanish on the point. And we found our way into Macrihanish. The navigators didn't navigate very well, but I'm map reading and got in there. And we landed at Macrihanish. All hell was let loose, because there was an aircraft US over there training, and we had to get back. So they sent a Lysander over from Arbroath to pick us all up, and I was in disgrace, you know. But it went down in the annals of, you know, quite a hairy landing and takeoff. But as a result of that, when they inquired into what was happening, I told them that, you know, I wanted to pee, and I wasn't about that brand new uniform. I mean, the uniform was only a month old. I peed in that; it'd been stained forever. So I told them about all this, and the net result was, you wouldn't believe they'd actually designed a pee tube for us, for a Swordfish. And this thing, it must have been made by a giant who was deformed, because it was chrome plate, brass tube about 9 inches long, with a diameter of about 2.5-3 inches, with a little cap on the top, all chromium plated, everything else, attached to a rubber tube to a bag underneath the seat, locked in a clip in between your seats. Now, that's all fine and dandy. You've somewhere to pee if you want to. But the trouble is, you've got to get your dilly when you're in an aircraft, and it's about 1/2 inch long and freezing cold, and you've got to go through. And I wore a jock strap in those days. You've got the outer layer, inner layer, woolly, inside, vest, pants, jockstrap, and then get this little thing about an inch long to try and, you know, squirt into the thing. And of course, you couldn't do it. So bloody pee comes all over the place. You end up with pee stains all over, and it was absolutely impossible to use. But it was one of the things that reminded me of the way Navy did things. They wanted a pee tube, they spent a leg and an arm for it, when they could have found something different anyway. But so that was a result of that particular exercise. I was flown back to Arbroath. Nobody said a word. It just went down in the rain. I didn't even get a blank seat or anything for it. But my instructor, because while we were there, we were attached to 757 Squadron doing the stooging. We're doing our deck landing training as well in Swordfish, which is an easy airplane to deck land. I mean, it's so flyable. Trouble is, it's slow and slow. If you go on a carrier, it's going at 30 knots, and you're coming in at 45 knots stalling speed. You're approaching at 15 miles an hour, you know, and it's floppy, and it's all right, safe. It's not, no problem. So that was the next thing, and the net result was that we didn't have the Argus at that time, which was a deck landing training, and I was due to go down to Yeovilton, so I never landed on a carrier, never ever. The instructor, who I know now quite well, is Pat Jackson, who was involved in the Bismarck affair. He said, "God, if you can land there, you can land on anything." So I said, "You." He said, "All right." So I was okay for deck landing on Swordfish, no problem.
How did you practice it? Obviously on land. Did you have a marked out area for the length of the deck?
We really did just normal 3-point landings in the Swordfish on an airfield. Not even marked out. It was we just came in to spot landing, making for one place. No wires or anything like that, just there and there. Just one after another. And we didn't do many of them. Let's see what's happening. Okay, we're stooging around Scotland, just taking the lads around doing their trips. And one particular exercise, it just shows how casual safety was considered in those days compared to now. And later on I'll tell you about the physical change from the end of the war to flying in civil aircraft conditions, when flying had suddenly become safe. But this one was a situation where we had to do navigation exercises. A triangle navigation exercise was set off by the observer instructor to go from Arbroath up north, due north, along the coast, at about 20,000 feet, at night, nighttime exercise, and then come down the foothills of the mountains, all the way down to, I have to look at a map to tell you where it was, but I can't tell you just off the top of my head, but a triangle nav, and then come back to Arbroath. But he forgot that when he was setting off for a navigation exercise, you have to set off from a point you can see. And Montrose had a visual beacon there, 20 miles north of Arbroath. So he set off the exercise from Montrose, 20 miles north. So the whole triangle shifted 20 miles north. The second leg was in the middle of all the mountains, at the same height as we were flying. In cloud. In night. Can you imagine? I don't think that night we lost six pilots, six crew, on that one leg. One bloke, Mo Dunfield, got hit a mountain, and he was flying. He wasn't flying with a crew, I don't think. I don't think he had a crew. I can't remember him, but he was knocked off the top of a mountain in the snow. And he crawled all the way down and managed to find a bothy somewhere, and people took him in. And that's another story later on when we get down to Cape Town. But he broke both legs.
It sounds an incredibly dangerous exercise to do at night.
Completely, oh yeah. We never thought of it. You realise it, but it was, the mountain there, you know, it's just, you know.
How much could you see, though, while you were doing it?
No, very little. Very little.
Was it a moonlit night, or was it just
that's difficult. That night, the problem that really started, it blew a gale blew up, a westerly gale, and of course that made everything worse, because two of the boys never got back, because you couldn't fly into a 40-mile-an-hour gale, you see, you got problems. And it flows for observers, the kids that was observing, they were going on the original wind that they had to start off with, and they probably couldn't do a wind find and the exercise. It's night. It could have dropped a flare throat, probably. But probably in cloud. You see, we're going through the tops of cloud all the time. Not... it was flying. You know, it's from a pilot's point of view, he didn't think about it. You know, you suddenly realise that something had gone wrong. There are all things like this that's happening. You'll read of Hammy Gray, who got the VC. Well, I was with Hammy in Canada, and he was selected for fighters, and he went straight to Yeovilton, which I missed because of my tonsillitis. But his school pal, who had been pals together, he was selected for Swordfish in Canada, and he came, and he was stooging observers at Arbroath with me. And I will come across this in my records, but I flew off on a sea nav, going from Arbroath straight out to sea, to come back, do sea navigation all the way out, and to come back. But when I came back, following the instructions that I was given by the observer, I ended up nearly at Aberdeen. So the Arbroath here and Aberdeen's here. And what is happening, the verge ring on my compass was loose. He locked it down, but it wasn't, and it was going round all the time. And we were flying on that verge ring, it was loose. So I can't tell you the number of miles, but it's a long way from Arbroath to Aberdeen. And from out where we were probably an hour out, 80, 90, 100 miles out, came in to land, and we hit the Aberdeen, or there, somewhere about there, and came all the way back. I reported that. I believe it's marked in here somewhere. I reported back to the engineer people, and they never looked at it, by all accounts, because Hammy Gray's pal, it'll be all in here, flew the same aircraft, and they never came back, and never found his body. They found the wheel from the aircraft, so obviously ran out of fuel and fell in. But that was indicative of the sort of problems you had. The aircraft themselves were not well maintained at that time, in that situation, because even the mechanics were still almost under training, you know. So it wasn't as slick as it came later on, and that was one of the situations where, you know, Hammy Gray's pal dropped into the water. It wasn't funny one way and another, and of course one thing too that. If you had a forced landing situation in Scotland, you never knew whether a field was flat or bumpy, you know. And when bumpy, I mean on the side of a hill, because it just looked flat, you know. And you were flying across varying ground, so you never knew really what your height was in relation to the ground when you're coming into land. So it was all visual, like acuity, really. So that was a repetitive thing. Local flying around with the CNAV, air test, land nav, sea nav. I did another after that first incident on Arran. That was this first aircraft, you know, first of 1, 2, 3. The first of April, I went to Macrihanish, All Fool's Day, I think, and then on the 9th of April, 10th of April. I did another forced landing with the troops on board at a place called Auchinblay. And that was in the back. This was the situation I was just telling you about the land being bumpy and different and not knowing whether it was muggy or whatever. We're flying above cloud in an Avex. Bearing what particularly was, it was a straight land navigation, and we're above cloud, and we were going into a cloud situation that was lumpy. It was, and I didn't know what clouds were then in those days, but obviously there was too much of it. We're flying into it at the right height, and we looked around for a hole in the cloud to get below it, which we did, which in itself was dangerous because the clouds were probably over the mountains anyway. And we came through the hole to find some ground below us, but not a lot of space, with a house and a field and everything else. Clouds up above us, clouds all the way around. We don't want to go back, we'll do an emergency landing, which we duly did. And we landed in this field of belonging to a house, big house in the country. Did a nice landing, beautifully done. Ran along the grass into the muddy patch. The wheels went down, the aircraft up in the top, tipped onto its nose, not over, with the troops in the back, and stuck there. And the boys jumped up and down in the back until the tail came down and broke the back of the aircraft. So they're here now, a swordfish with a broken back in Auchinblay, which is, God knows, it's 80 or so miles from Arbroath. The man turned out to be Sir James Caird, who was a ship owner of the ship lines. And we were invited in there, and he was telling us all about the things and the biscuits they were making with high protein and everything else. And they wined and dined us until the ambulance came along to pick us up about 2 hours later. By the time we got, we had to be poured into the ambulance. And he was quite a nice guy. And that really was that. And my time was running out because I was having two, you know, I'd only been flying swordfish, what, fortnight? Two fairly good accidents to start with. So they thought about this a little bit. And I don't know when exactly it happened, but it was, must have been June time. Let's go. I was doing circuits and bumps, swordfish, flying other aircraft. I flew an albacore at this stage, which was an albacore, had a cockpit cover. It was inside, like a gentleman's aircraft, with an armchair to sit in and everything else. Good view, propellers in front, the wings almost behind you, if I remember rightly. So you're sitting there looking at things, a beautiful, nice aeroplane to fly. It had peculiarities in its engine, but it was okay, you know, it flew. And the engine was a development aircraft that they found some problems with the lower cylinders, but it was a nice aircraft, the engine ran well, but it reminds me of the problems that the Americans were having with radials when they first brought martlets over to this country and people were flying them. And the engines were failing very rapidly because all the bottom cylinders were seizing. And a friend of mine had a bit of a problem with a martlet in Scotland, and he got badly concussed, and he was sent where we joined him later on at Yeovilton. But that was one of the problems. We're still in the development stage, both here and across the water, with aircrafts and aircraft engines, aircraft styles. And you got some of the relics of it. You know, if it started, they accepted it, and then they suddenly found there was a problem. You got the secondary aircraft life, but that's one of those things. Anyway, we, Arbroath, flying albacores, no problem there. At, I told you about the Caird, learning Cairds. So we're now flying albacores with circuit bumps, land nav, local flying. Proctor, I flew Proctor to local flying, and then I flew that as a transit thing. Did some photography with the boys in Swordfish and May. Photography, gunnery, sea nav. Deck landings, May the 20th, we were doing Addles for there, with no troops on them. We did the Addles by ourselves. Oh no, we had two crew. We used to take the boys up, and they used to like going up. And so, with that, on to that. This is a routine thing now. We're doing Addles, local flying, air task, land nav, swordfish air experience for... That was supposed to be areas for people, for the kids. Local landmarks for the trainees. When finding night Addles. Night Addles, night deck landing training. Proctor, I took a Proctor to air with a spare wheel on it, you know, hacking really. Night Addles, camera gun formations, swordfish, a lot of air, a lot of flying around in airmanship more than anything else, I think. You're just depth charge operations, camera guns.
What was the depth charge operation? What was that?
Well, just to... You dropped a smoke float sometimes, and then you did a run round, came down and came low to the right sort of level to drop a depth charge, and you dropped two 20 little flash bombs or something like that to show where the splash was. That was really to fly. It was your experience more than the observers, but they did the navigation, they did the turns and all the calculations and everything else. But... and generally spotting an activity. Actually, it turned out a bit of a scam, really, because all you used to go to low flying over the water, but if I remember rightly. So that's on. We're on and on and on and on. And on. Swordfish, albacore, just flying all the time.